puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's Sunday morning, so that means it's time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephanie.
So remind us of the clue that you have from last week.
Well, many of our listeners look forward to a summer enjoying the pleasures of forests and lakes. So this week, we're going to consider the origins of cottage country in southeastern Manitoba as revealed by an abandoned log cabin.
So where do we start?
It's a little known fact that when Manitoba joined Confederation in 1870, it did not enjoy the same rights as the other four provinces. Specifically, it did not receive ownership of the province's natural resources. You know, its water, its timber, fish and game, minerals, you know, that sort of thing. These remained the property of the federal government. Manitoba was not alone either. Alberta and Saskatchewan, they had no control over their natural resources either.
Well, that doesn't really sound fair.
Well, they did get a deal. In return for federal control of their natural resources, the three prairie provinces received a guaranteed annual subsidy. They basically got cash from the federal government. But it would be far more lucrative to have the right to impose things like resource use fees or royalties. So in Manitoba, in 1911, the government began to lobby the federal government to gain control over its natural resources. Unfortunately, success would take 19 more years to achieve in 1930 with the passage by Parliament of something called the Manitoba Natural Resources Act. And among the effects of the new act was the formation of something called the Whiteshell Forest Reserve.
And so what is the Whiteshell Forest Reserve?
It came about in 1931. It was the year after Manitoba gained control of its natural resources. And it set aside 936 square miles of heavily forested land in southeastern Manitoba. That area included hundreds of lakes. And this is a direct quote from the newspapers of the time. It would be a vacation land and preserve for all time in its natural wild state. The boundaries of this area were the Manitoba-Ontario border on the east side, the Winnipeg River on the north, and Falcon Lake on the south. I should hasten to say, though, that Manitoba had been using the natural resources within the Forest Reserve area as far back as 1909, because that's when the Pointe-du-Bois hydroelectric generating station was built. And then between 1930 and 31, a second generating station at Slave Falls was built too. So it wasn't like it was sort of unpopulated. It wasn't like it wasn't being used. It was just now formally made into this thing called the Forest Reserve.
And how were people able to get to the new Forest Reserve?
Well, initially, much of it was quite inaccessible. You could only get here by boat or railway. But between 1931 and 1932, a highway that would eventually become the Manitoba portion of the Trans-Canada Highway was built through the Forest Reserve. It provided easy access to Caddy, Westhawk, and Falcon Lakes. By 1933, there were 400 surveyed cottage lots around nine lakes in the reserve, and a road started extending northward from the Trans-Canada. It reached Brereton Lake by 1936 and Red Rock Lake by 1937. By the 1940s, that road had extended to White and Jessica Lakes, and in the 1950s to Big Whiteshell, Betula, Nutumick, and Dorothy. So that by the 1960s, the number of cottage lots had grown to over 2,600. Just a huge increase.
Mm-hmm. This was all in the southern side of the Forest Reserve. Was development happening elsewhere too?
Right, yeah. In 1941, an all-season highway was built from Lac de Bonny to Pointe-du-Bois. Now, this made it easier for people living near the generating station to drive to the outside world, but just as importantly, it provided an easier means for people to enter the Forest Reserve for recreational purposes. In the 1950s, the Whiteshell Forest Reserve really began to develop as people began seeking what we might have think of as a summer playground.
And what caused the boom of the 1950s?
Well, there were at least three factors. One was the continued construction of roads in the reserve to facilitate access to even more remote parts of the area. A second was the growing demand for summer cottages. And a third was the growing number of overnight campers, people who wouldn't necessarily stay for a long time. So, for example, in 1959, the government issued 5,000 temporary camping permits. And within 10 years, that count had increased to 26,000. Again, just a huge increase.
Yeah, for sure. So your clue mentioned an abandoned log cabin. Where does it come into the story?
Well, as human use of the forest reserve increased, the provincial government began to develop its management facilities to kind of keep tabs on things. So through the 1950s, it began building what it called administration sites at a variety of spots. In a few places where it seems the government wanted to have maybe a more aesthetically pleasing facility, it built an attractive sort of rustic-looking building made from peeled logs. And in some cases, they would paint these brown with nice white ends where the logs overlapped at the corners. These included a district office and museum building at Westhawk Lake, both of which are still there today. There was a museum at Nutumick Lake. Likewise, it's still there today. And most pertinent to today's story, a ranger's cabin at Pointe du Bois.
So it's the ranger's cabin that's abandoned.
Yes, indeed. It was built in the 1950s. It's a small rectangular building made of logs with a log-covered porch on the front that sat right next to that highway from Lac de Bonnie to Pointe du Bois.
And what condition is it in today?
Some of the exterior logs are rather badly deteriorated, and it has sustained quite a bit of vandalism. Inside, there is a central living room with doors leading into four smaller rooms. There's a kitchen, an office, and two bedrooms.
So I got to ask, when was it abandoned?
Well, when I visited it in 2018, I found items strewn about the floor, including a 1999 telephone directory, which I take to mean that the building was still in use at that time. So potentially, the abandonment occurred around 2000, so maybe a little over 20 years ago. I'm told that many of the forestry facilities were closed when the associated fire towers were removed. You know, they had these fire towers so that they could watch to see, forest fires. They had technology that no longer required the use of these forest towers, so they got rid of those. And if they didn't need the place to have people stay, well, they got rid of the building as well. Mm. Incidentally, another find that I found inside the building was a sign that had been used to restrict travel in the forest reserve. And it was signed by provincial forester James Summers. I did a little research and found that he had held that position of provincial forester from 1943 to 1964. So it must have been in the cabin basically since it was built. And that sort of dates the cabin to the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. And the forest reserve no longer exists today, right?
Right. At least as something called a forest reserve, because in 1961, the Whiteshell Forest Reserve became the first provincial park in Manitoba as a result of legislation that had been passed the previous year. Interesting, though, the legislation initially allowed things like forestry, mining, and agriculture to occur in provincial parks, so long as the recreational values were preserved. Well, of course, today the legislation has changed and it's rather more restrictive of what can be done in a provincial park. But of course, I think as many, if not most of our listeners know, the Whiteshell Provincial Park continues to offer what I would consider world-class recreational opportunities in an absolutely glorious natural setting. So, what better place to spend time when you have to maintain social distancing? And you could check out this abandoned log cabin that was all part of the development of this provincial park.
Well, that was very interesting. Thank you so much, Gordon.
You're welcome, Stephanie.
And what's up for next week?
Well, next week we're going to revisit an abandonment theme that we discussed in the very first episode of this series 6 years ago in 2015. That site and others like it across Canada, well, I have to say, has been very much in the news lately.
Interesting. Well, I look forward to talking to you then.
We will talk then. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.